After years of legal and political arguing over the Keystone XL pipeline, the Obama administration denied a permit to construct it. But last week, President Trump reversed that decision and said the pipeline could proceed. The president's decision, however, did not end the fight over the pipeline. First, several Native American groups filed suit in federal court in Montana, and now the Sierra Club and other environmental advocacy groups have filed a lawsuit in the same court. Here to talk with us about the litigation to stop the pipeline are Deborah Sivas, director of the Environmental Law Clinic at Stanford Law School, and Evan Zoldan, a professor at the University of Toledo College of Law. Deborah, tell us what the Sierra Club and these other plaintiffs are alleging in order to try to stop the president's decision to allow the pipeline to go into effect.
Sure. The complaint that was filed on Thursday by the environmental groups really focuses on the claims under the National Environmental Policy Act and under the sort of General Administrative Procedure Act. And what they're alleging is that there has not been enough review of the environmental impacts from the pipeline. There is an environmental review that was done a while back, but they're alleging that there's new information about the dangers posed by the particular kind of oil coming out of Alberta, and new information about the price of oil and how that might affect whether this pipeline would facilitate getting more oil out of the ground than would otherwise happen. So they're alleging that those things have not been adequately considered in the State Department's approval, and also that the State Department has not articulated a legitimate reason for reversing the Obama administration decision.
Evan, are there any differences between the suits by the two groups, the environmental groups and the Native American groups?
There are a couple of differences. The arguments are basically the same. The claims are basically the same. The complaint was filed earlier in the week. Has a little more detail. It has more detail about the environmental risks associated with the pipeline. It has a little bit of legal argument, neither one of which is necessary or even typical at this stage in a federal case. So I would say that even though they do look different, they're essentially making the same claims.
Deborah, one of the arguments that's getting made here is that the environmental impact statement is from 2014. It's the plaintiffs are arguing it's stale. They should, you know, that it, and it also doesn't take into account a lot of the information that you mentioned. What is the law in terms of how recent an environmental impact statement has to be in order for it to be valid?
Yeah, there's no clear bright line about when an EIS like that goes stale, but so it depends on what evidence the plaintiffs will bring forward to support their claim that there's new information that should have been considered. And I think in particular the environmental groups are focusing on a study by the National Academy of Sciences that was released a year or so ago that really talks in more detail about the specific dangers of this kind of oil and how it's more difficult to react to a spill of oil. You know, we have spills from pipelines and other oil facilities, and so part of what they're arguing is that the EIS needs to be updated in order to incorporate that new information. So again, there's no bright line. It depends if they can put forward enough information to convince the court that the EIS needs to be updated.
Evan, can you anticipate what the government's response is likely to be? It can't just be new president, new order.
Right. Well, so the first thing to keep in mind is that at this stage, there is not really going to be an argument about the underlying merits. And so the first thing that's going to happen is the government is going to move to dismiss the complaint. And at this point, there's not going to be a lot of argument about the underlying facts. So at this first stage, when the government moves to dismiss, it's going to accept for the purposes of its motion, the facts as they are stated, and it's going to make legal arguments. And so what the court is going to have to decide in the first instance is just the legal question of whether the plaintiffs have stated a claim, that is, whether they have noted any facts for which the law provides legal redress. And so we're not going to see a lot of duking it out on the facts at this stage in the litigation.
Deborah, do you think there will be some We have about 30 seconds here. Do you think there will be a motion for an injunction, or is this just going to play out over a longer period of time?
I'm not sure about that because there's, as you probably know, this is not the end of the line. So in particular for this particular segment, which is kind of the hypotenuse of a triangle, the pipeline would have to go through Nebraska, and there is a whole other state process that's going on in Nebraska. So I'm not sure whether the plaintiffs will ask for an injunction. It might be kind of hard to get at this point because there's no imminent harm that the pipeline's going to be built in these early times. And I do agree that I think the government's going to move to dismiss primarily, or at least one of the claims being that it doesn't even have to do an EIS for this project. I think they're taking the position that these permits are fully discretionary. And although the State Department did an EIS, it didn't have to.
All right. Well, we're going to talk more about the ongoing fight, which who knows when it will end, over the Keystone XL pipeline. In a reversal of one of the prior administration's major decisions, President Trump last week approved construction of the Keystone XL pipeline that will run from Canada to Nebraska. But environmental and Native American groups are now suing to prevent the pipeline going forward, and so the many years of controversy over this pipeline did not come to a close with the president's decision last week. We are talking about the new litigation with Deborah Sivas, the director of the Environmental Law Clinic at Stanford University, and Evan Zoldan, professor at the University of Toledo College of Law. Evan, you had one president's administration say that the pipeline would not be allowed to go forward. They wouldn't get a permit to come across from Canada. Now you have a new president, new administration came in with different policies, and they, with the same background of information, reverse the decision and say that the pipeline can proceed. Does that cause any legal issues? Is it okay for an administration to just reverse what the prior administration did?
That's a great question. So there is a long tradition, including a statute called the Administrative Procedure Act, that is quite skeptical of agency changes of policy just based on the change of administration. And so the question that the court is going to ask is this change in policy arbitrary or capricious? Now, it's not a clear-cut question because there definitely is authority, including the Supreme Court at times, has upheld changes in policy that seem to be supported by nothing more than the fact that the administration changed. On the other hand, sometimes courts say, well, no, you need to provide more information than just that was and this is now in order to justify a change in policy. And I'll tell you the one thing that's very interesting about this is that a court is more likely to defer to the agency to the extent that the court is going to apply what's called Chevron deference. And Chevron is the name of a Supreme Court case that directs courts to defer to agency determinations. And what's interesting about that is that, in general, the Republicans in Congress, and particularly in the House, have been very opposed to a strong Chevron deference. And so if they have their way and are able to, either through legislation or through the confirmation of Judge Gorsuch, restrain the power of Chevron deference, it would mean that it is less likely that changes in policy, like the one we just saw, are going to be upheld by courts on review.
Deborah, which side has the stronger argument?
Well, I think it's a bit of a toss-up here because there is a document. When the State Department reversed this recent reversal a few days ago, they put out a document like 30 pages long that kind of is their explanation. So just as we were saying, they have to at least give some explanation to make the decision not arbitrary and capricious. And you know, so it's hard to handicap because there are some legitimate arguments that there's new information that should have been considered and that it was arbitrary to simply reverse the decision. On the other hand, as we just heard, there is deference to the agency, especially in this arena, where it's a kind of a the reason there's a presidential permit is that it's the pipeline goes across borders, and so it's kind of a foreign affairs issue, which is even more deference to at the presidential level. So I don't know, who ultimately might win out on this one. I think it's kind of a toss up, and it all depends on whether the judge thinks there's enough explanation for why the State Department reversed course.
Well, Evan, environmental litigation can often take up a lot of time, and this is not an environmental impact statement that has really ever been looked at by a court, because the prior administration denied the permit, so you didn't have litigation about whether the EIS was sufficient. What is a court going to do when it looks at the EIS now? How searching an inquiry will it do?
Well, the inquiry the court's going to make is they're going to ask how hard of a look did the agency take at the underlying policy decision. And so they're going to ask, did the State Department comply with the law, the National Environmental Policy Act, in putting together the environmental impact statement? They're going to ask whether or not they complied with the regulations about asking for comment from the public. And then the court is going to evaluate whether, given the way that the environmental impact statement was put together, whether the agency took a hard look at the facts that it collected before it made its policy decision.
Deborah, one last thing. How long, given all that, do you think this will go on for?
I think these cases don't move super quickly. I mean, as we talked about earlier, there might be a request for some kind of injunction, and there's probably going to be a motion to dismiss. But if neither of those things happen, then you kind of are in for the long haul. There's a record the agency would produce, and they would set a briefing schedule and argument, and that could take quite a while. Typically, these cases go on for a year or more.
Well, our thanks to Deborah Sivas, the director of the Environmental Law Clinic at Stanford University Law School, and Evan Zoldan, a professor at the University of Toledo College of Law, for being here on Bloomberg Law to talk about new litigation over the Keystone XL pipeline. Coming up on Bloomberg Law, we're going to be talking about Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. He was once the scourge of the Obama administration, or at least one of them, took them to court on everything, but now he is facing securities fraud charges in Texas, and he lost a couple of key rulings in court. That's coming up on Bloomberg Law. This is Bloomberg.